Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It is Thursday, May 28th, 2015. It's a beautiful day in here in Clearwater, Florida. Sun is shining as it usually does. We're having very warm days. Let's see, 84 degrees outside. Beautiful day. So today we're going to talk about solvents and vapors. And my guest today is toxicologist Stephen Gilbert. And he is a regular guest. He's on every month or so. And we're going through actually chapter by chapter his book called A Small Dose of Toxicology, which you can get on his website for free. The easiest way to find it is to just go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, look for his show, and click on the book. And it'll take you right there, rather than give you a longer URL to get there. So today we're going to talk about toxics and vapors. Toxics and vapors are those things that you smell, like when you have a permanent ink marker and it has that smell, or glue when you're making a model, or all of those things that smell like something. We're going to talk about the toxicity of those. Hi, Dr. Gilbert.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. We're having a great day in Seattle here, too. We have a nice sunny day. My solar panels are producing lots of electricity.
That's so good to hear. So tell us about solvents and vapors.
So before we jump into solvents, I just want to point out that yesterday was the birthday of a very, very important person. That is Rachel Carson. And she wrote Silent Spring, and was really instrumental in raising the issue of chemicals. Well, she focused mostly on pesticides and was really instrumental in banning of DDT. And I have just a couple quotes I want to read from her. One of them is, if we are going to be so intimate with these chemicals, eating and drinking them, take them into the very marrow of our bone, we had better know something about their nature and their power. And this is, solvents is just one example of that, but she's focusing on pesticides. But we do need a better understanding of the nature and power of the chemicals we're exposed to.
Absolutely.
Another one of her quotes was, as crude as a weapon as a caveman's club, the chemical barrage has been hurled against the fabric of life. And we are hurling lots of chemicals in the fabric of life. We have, you know, thousands of chemicals that are produced over 1 million pounds per year, and the vast majority of them, we do not know a lot about their toxicity. So I just want to point out and just remind everybody that Silent Spring is still a wonderful book, and Rachel Carson's birthday was yesterday in 1907.
Thank you very much. I totally agree with you. Totally, totally, totally. In fact, I think that I didn't read Silent Spring for many, many years, even though I was interested in toxics, because I thought it was an environmental book. But it really, I think, is the first general public book on toxics and the effect that they have on the environment and the effect they have on our health. And I think everyone should read it. It just is, I think, the basic beginning of this whole issue about toxics that we're discussing every day.
Yeah, I think it's very, very important to think about the, you know, chemicals, the toxic and hazardous properties, many of the chemicals that we're exposed to. How do we lessen our exposure to chemicals? And solvents is just one thing we need to be mindful of and lessen the exposure to.
So tell us about the nature of solvents. Where do we find them, et cetera?
So, you know, we find solvents everywhere. For example, water is a solvent. So you got to think very broadly about solvents. I feed my hummingbirds here in Seattle, and so I dissolve sugar into water. So you think water is a solvent. Actually, water is a very powerful solvent. But you heat it up, you depend on water being a solvent when you extract your coffee or tea and get the caffeine and other chemicals out. So you're dissolving these chemicals into the water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people think of solvents as something that evaporates, that would be come out of the water and you would inhale, but water is a solvent too, and when it's heated up, it's more of a solvent. Another example of a solvent is alcohol. Many of us drink alcohol, and we take it in orally in the alcoholic beverages, but alcohol is a very powerful solvent, and you can tell that by knowing that it is exhaled. When you exhale, in breathalyzer tests, that's alcohol moves from the lung out into our breath, and we calibrate the breathalyzer so we can extrapolate from the alcohol in our breath to the alcohol in our bloodstream. So alcohol is a very potent solvent, even for a wild little fad where you could inhale alcohol instead of drinking it. And alcohol and many solvents pass readily in and out of the lungs. And that's why alcohol solvents are so potent. them in through the lungs, and they go right to the brain. So solvents are very potent chemicals that cause a lot of neurological disorders, and you all recognize the problems with alcohol. You know, many people have been a little tipsy or drunk even, and that's due to alcohol being a solvent entering the nervous system. So those are just a little bit of examples of some of the solvents that we encounter in everyday life and we bump into all the time. And so, alcohol, just one more comment, alcohol. Remember, it's made from yeast. Yeast produce the alcohol by chewing up sugars, converting sugars into alcohol. And we depend on that. You know, Washington State, for example, is a big wine-producing state. So there's a lot of fermentation that goes on. And the alcohol is actually toxic to the yeast. You get your alcohol concentration in the wine or other beverage up to around 12%. And it usually kills the yeast, although there's some varieties of yeast that can tolerate higher levels of alcohol. But that's an example of, you know, killing the cells, the yeast cells, because it essentially dissolves them. So if we just look around and think on a day-to-day basis, our encounter with solvents.
Well, some places that we find solvents in consumer products are places like when we pump gas at the gas station or change the car oil or paint your house. Or there's a lot of solvents and glues and things like that when you're smelling things, that they're very volatile. And so people are very familiar with, like, being poisoned by eating or drinking something. But solvents go right into your bloodstream and right to your brain. They can go right to any part of your body very instantly when you breathe them.
You know, solvents, usually think of solvents as fat soluble, and our basically our brain is one big ball of fat. And one place we're exposed to a lot of solvents, you mentioned glues and other things, is filling up the gasoline in our cars. And you go to a gas pump, there's many solvents, you know, in gasoline. One of them is hexane, a rather potent toxic chemical. And you tend to inhale those when you fill the car up with gasoline, particularly when it's warm out, because it evaporates more quickly. And we've all smelled the smell of gasoline. But the trick is to try to keep away from that odor. And that's one thing you can do as when you fill your car up, is to get the gasoline pump started and then step away from it so you're not inhaling those solvents. I know, and one thing that's always bothered me was in Oregon, you can't fill the gas tank up yourself. You have an attendant fill the gas tank up. And I think that's a bad thing to do because those attendants are repeatedly exposed to the solvents and gasoline. Whereas if you fill your own gas tank up, you're exposed a little bit, but you're spreading that exposure across a much larger number of people. So I actually would argue from a tox point of view, it's really bad to have the attendants chronically filling your gas tank because of the solvent exposure from gasoline. And there's also been people that sniff glue and their solvent exposure looking for the high of salt from solvents.
Yeah, I was thinking about what you just said about the gas station attendants. You know, it just continually amazes me that we know these things about the toxicity of chemicals, and yet that they continue to be allowed. Like why aren't those attendants saying, well, we should be wearing gas masks or something?
Right. It is amazing. We're just not, again, we're not using the knowledge we have. You know, it goes back just a little bit of history here. You know, ether, which was once used quite often as an anesthetic agent, was discovered in 1275. So I wanted to say ether was discovered in 1275 by Raymundus Lullius. And he discovered it, but it wasn't recognized as an anesthetic agent until the mid-1800s. But there's rumors that Paracelsus, who was the dose maker of the poison historian, he was in the 1500s, enjoyed the effects of ether. So we're actually inhaling this for pleasure, some of the solvents that we discovered. So we've known about solvents for a long time in our history, over almost 800 years.
Yeah, it's just, I would like to see, I said this on a show this week already, but I want to say it again. I would really like to see the toxic products be properly labeled as toxic products, that if they're going to be there, instead of having a warning label on the back of the label, that it should be just right on the front. There should be a skull and crossbones or something, so you can just walk down the aisle and see all the toxic products. I think that a lot of the problem in doing something about this is that people just don't know how to recognize these toxics. That they look at a product, and how are they going to know that it's in there?
Yeah, and do we really need it there? I think that's a great, particularly with cosmetic agents. Oh, we often don't need the solvents. The New York Times did a great series on nail salons and the poisons in nail salons. We can talk more about that, too, that all the chemicals that are used and the solvents used in nail salons, and who's exposed and who's vulnerable. You got to ask who's vulnerable to that exposure. Kids being a really important vulnerability, remembering they eat more, drink more, and breathe more than adults do. So they, if they're down in the breathing zone of solvents, and gasoline's one of them, they tend to inhale more and take more into their lungs than adults do. Adults are also up higher, so they're not in the breathing zone of a lot of the solvents. So it's very important to remember there are vulnerabilities to solvent exposure and exposure to solvents.
When I go to the mall, I can smell the nail salon all the way down, like many feet away as I'm approaching it. But we need to go to break. So actually, I'd like us to talk about nail salons when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. And we're talking about solvents and the toxicity of solvents. Tell us about nail salons. You know, first, I just want to say, I think that the New York Times is doing a really good job. They've had a whole series of different investigations into the toxicity of things. I think they don't always tell us what could be done instead, but they're doing a really good job of telling us what's toxic.
Yeah, I think that series on nail salons is just excellent. I encourage your listeners to take a look at that in New York Times. And there's other groups. There's been quite a bit of work on nail salons in the last decade trying to point out the hazards of these. And Women's Voices for the Earth, Weave, has done a great job, too, working on the nail salon issue. A number of other nonprofits have really tried to bring attention to the solvents used in these salons and the worker exposure. But before jumping into that, I just want to point out a great example of solvents and the vulnerability of kids is alcohol again. And fetal alcohol syndrome and fetal alcohol effect, you can see it's not uncommon, unfortunately, and that's the vulnerability of kids in utero. So they come up with facial deformities, reduced IQ, neurological disorders. And that's because, you know, alcohol is a very powerful solvent and essentially helps dissolve a little bit of the brain. So solvents, many solvents produce neurological disorders and peripheral neuropathy, so you can't tingling in the toes, for example, and hexane is very powerful, a neurotoxic agent. So many of these solvents produce headaches, produce dizziness, lightheadedness, and really are, you know, sort of look like a little bit like being drunk, because they are all have that common mechanism of being solvents to the central nervous system. Mm-hmm. Nail salons are the same way. They use a lot of solvents to dissolve the nail polish, like toluene. And when you evaporate a paint in nail salon, you know, on your nails, you're evaporating those solvents. So the workers are exposed to excessive amounts of solvent in the air. And that's where the exposure comes from the nail salons and the inhalation of that. So the nail salons often don't have good ventilation systems. You know, commonly in industrial settings, you expect, exposing solvents to the air, you have something that would suck away the air around the solvent exposure and vent it outside. Now, I'm not crazy about venting all these solvents outside either, but that would reduce individual exposure. So if the nail salon is operated by women, they're often paid just minimum wage, work many hours, bent over, you know, fingers and toes with the solvent, either removing nail polish or applying nail polish. And are there better ways? We have non-solvent-based paints for polishes like that, for paint colors and nail salons. And the other thing is, you know, the nail salons also have phthalates. They use phthalates, which are fragrant carriers, and they help actually harden nail polish. They provide flexibility to the nail polish that's put on fingers and nails, and that helps them not crack and last longer. So we put all kinds of chemicals in these products, and your point before that we often don't know what's in these products is really important. We need better labeling, and we need to move away from these solvents as best we can and provide proper ventilation for people that are chronically exposed to the solvents in their workday. And you got to ask, you know, people that come in, the nail salon workers, if a woman's pregnant, you know, what's happening to that fetus, and what's developmental disorders that might result from solvent exposure, because you inhale that solvent, it goes right to the lungs, goes very rapidly into the blood system and into the placenta and into the child, developing child.
My great aunt owned a drugstore many years ago. She was my great aunt, so this was like 50 years ago. And I remember as a child, when I first started wearing nail polish, she immediately grabbed my hand and she said, "Don't wear nail polish." And she told me that she would see women coming into the pharmacy where their fingernails were actually cracked and bleeding because they were wearing fingernail polish. And she said, "Your nail needs to breathe. And when you put fingernail polish on your nail, then it stops it from breathing and that it actually harms the fingernail." Now, so I have never been one to wear nail polish since I heard that because it made sense to me. It's not about how toxic or non-toxic the nail polish is. There's a lot of new nail polishes now, and I don't think that any of them are non-toxic enough for me. But there's that whole idea. Do you remember in the Wizard of Oz, I remember hearing a story about the actor that played the Tin Man. Actually, I think it was a different actor was supposed to play it before, and they covered his whole body with paint to be tin, and he got really sick. That our body needs to be able to breathe. Every part of our bodies need to be able to breathe. And nail polish is just unnecessary. It's toxic, unnecessary, stops your body from breathing, and why do we even have it?
That 007 movie where the woman was all painted in gold, I think.
Yeah.
And that, you're absolutely right. We need to breathe. We're not built to be painted and fouled up. And remember, perfumes depend on solvents to evaporate. You smell the perfume because the chemical is carrying and evaporating. So you're essentially applying solvents when you apply a perfume. And phthalates is one of the carriers of the fragrances that come off these products. But you got to ask what solvents are in perfumes and all cosmetic products that have some kind of fragrance attached with them. If you put fragrance things in your bathroom and they're dissolving, they're solvents that are outgassing those fragrances. And remember, they're just dominating the other odors that might be in a bathroom. They're not removing odors. They're just overwhelming our our senses, our sense of smell by throwing out a lot more solvents and perfumes. So you really have to be thinking, solvents are everywhere. They're used all kinds of things. You know, paints is a big classic one, glues, gasoline, we touched on a few of them. But solvents are everywhere. You know, you got to ask, do we really need them? Do we really need to put so many solvents on our fingers and toes?
Well, I think that probably that there are some products that we probably do need, and then there are other ones that we don't need. And one of the strategies about removing toxics is just sometimes it's to find a less toxic product, but sometimes it's remove the product altogether. We need to go to break again, but we'll talk more about this when we come back. You're listening to I can't talk today. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert, and he's the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, and he has a great, great, great website called toxipedia.org that looks at toxics from all different directions. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert, and he has a wonderful website called toxipedia.org, and he's the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, which you can get free, and I really think everybody should read this book. It's just it's written in a way that is very easy to read and has a lot of great information in it about toxics. Dr. Gilbert, I wanted to say, I remember when I was first studying toxics and looking up, I used to look up every ingredient in a dictionary. What's it called? The Condensed Chemical Dictionary. Mm-hmm. And I've had that dictionary for 30 years. But I used to look up every ingredient because I had no idea what any of this stuff was.
And good for you.
Thank you. And that's actually how I learned it, was looking up each chemical in a chemical dictionary. And then I started reading toxicology books and all these other things. But there's something that you'll see on a label called petroleum distillates. And I just wanted to mention what I learned about petroleum distillates, because I was trying to find out, like, what are these individual chemicals I'm being exposed to? But petroleum distillates, the way they make petroleum distillates is that they just see what's the cheapest solvents that are available that week, and they throw them all in a barrel, and it's called petroleum distillates. And so when you see that on the label of a pesticide, like many pesticides have petroleum distillates in them, you can never know what's in that. You can never know.
That's a great point, Deborah. I mean, that's really true. A lot of pesticides, I was thinking, if you're starting to talk, thinking of that, they're called inert ingredients.
Inert ingredients, yeah.
And which is a euphemism for just a bunch of stuff, carrier agents for the active ingredient pesticides. So most of the pesticide active ingredients are around 1% or less, very small amounts in the pesticide. But they've got to have carrying agents, which are mostly solvents or some kind of chemical that helps the active ingredient penetrate the oil on the leaves of the plant or on the skin of this, what you're trying to kill or harm. So, yeah, pesticides are horrible things, and just eliminating pesticides from using the active ingredient is really important. But equally, while you're removing all those solvents and all those, as you point out, petroleum distillates, which who knows what's in them.
Yeah, it's just another one of those things. When I look at the whole situation about toxics, I'm being more philosophical today because I'm just thinking about these things in my life right now. I'm looking at the whole situation and saying, you know, I've spent 30 years just identifying these things and saying and telling people that they're there. But I'm getting to this point where I want everybody to be more active. I want consumers to be more active. I want manufacturers to be more active. I want the government to be more active. I want everybody to recognize there's a problem, and we all have to work together to handle the problem. We're not recognizing there's a problem.
No, we're not. One of the problems is the Toxic Substance Control Act, TSCA it's called, which was passed in 1976. And there's efforts in Congress right now trying to change TSCA, that bill, Toxic Substance Control Act, that would demand more testing of industrial-based chemicals. We have a very precautionary approach when we put drugs onto the market. So a lot of our drugs are very carefully tested, so at least we understand the toxic properties of drugs, and that's required by the FDA. But we don't have a similar program to test industrial chemicals. Like the pesticides are an example. We test the pesticide, the active ingredient, as required by an act called FIFRA, but we don't test the product and all the solvents and other chemicals that are in the pesticides very well. So there's, you know, it really is a problem. We got to test more of the chemicals that we put out in the environment, and really, from an industrial standpoint, come up with ways to reduce the use of solvents. If you use the solvent, you have to dispose of it. So universities, businesses collect this material, and then what do you do with it? So the big challenge is reducing the amount of solvents we use, you know, particularly things like hexane, benzene, toluene, diethyl ether, chloroform, all these chemicals that are very toxic to the liver, to the central nervous system, our peripheral nervous system. So how do we go about and really encourage less use, even if some of these solvents are really cheaper to use? Just one quick story on this. When I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, you know, my dad was really worked on cars lots. Of course, I helped him work on cars. And we used degreasers, you know, to clean the car parts with. Mm-hmm. Gasoline was one of them, so I'm sure I was exposed to all kinds of solvents. And when that gasoline at that time was a lot of lead. So, you know, who knows? I might have been full professor. I hadn't lost my IQ points to lead.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when I was a child that when I would go to my grandparents, My grandfather was, he drove a truck. He had his own business as a truck driver, and he had his truck. And so he was always tinkering with the engine on his truck. And so he was, you know, gasoline cans were just sitting around there and degreasers and all these things. And, you know, nobody paid attention to anything. And I remember what that smelled like. And I remember, you know, it's just like this gasoline smell. How much did he get exposed to? And my grandmother died of cancer. And you know, I was just walking around there as a baby smelling this stuff.
Yep. And as I pointed out earlier, when you're a baby, you're walking around, you're often closer to the source of the solid. So you're inhaling more because you actually inhale more because you're younger. So you're getting a bigger exposure and a bigger dose of those solvents when you're young and when you're older. And we've done a little bit better job of cleaning up our use of solvents. We don't use, you know, I'm not sure we, I can say we don't use as much, but we're a little bit more careful with them, but we could be a lot more careful. One thing we have improved, though, is we've moved away from oil-based paints, which are solvent-based products like oil, like paint. So we've used some more water-based paints, which is an important change.
Yeah.
But, for example, we don't have a good way to return our paints when we do with old paints. So that's a problem. We need also a better way to dispose of our used products. So we don't have a policy where the paint manufacturers have to take these products back. And we really need to, we can't open up the paint can and let it evaporate, because that's putting solvents in the atmosphere, and that has huge consequences. That was one reason, you know, you can change the ozone, you know, breathing patterns, not good for the animals, not good for the environment, as well as humans.
When I lived in Northern California in the San Francisco Bay Area, we, in our local community, we had paint recycling. And so if we had cans of paint that were, you know, half full or whatever, we could take it to the paint recycling place, and they would, then people could come and just get free paint. And I thought that that was a great thing to do. We need to go to break again. So you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert, author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, and his website is toxipedia.org. And we'll be right back. You're listening to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. Oh, geez. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. My guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert, and he's the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology. His website is toxipedia.org. I'm making all these mistakes talking today. It must be too many solvents. No, I don't have solvents in my house. But something's affecting my brain today. Jeez, my nervous system is not functioning well. But
you filled up your car today with gasoline and got some solvent exposure or something?
No, I actually haven't been out of my house today. But you know, I do leave my house every day and go places, and I am exposed to solvents all over the place. You know, that we can live in. We can do all these things to reduce our exposure in our own homes. But then we go outside, and the toxins are all still there. And I'm just getting more and more aware of the need to clean things up everywhere and not just say, I'm going to stay in my house.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think if you go out and do, and I just want to point this out, some things we can do, if you are using nail salons, getting your fingers and toes done, it's important to patronize nail salons that are protecting their workers and have ventilation systems and little, you can look for that, little air purifiers, not purifiers, but air scoops that are moving the air away from the solvents that are being used. So it's important to patronize nail salons that are working to protect their workers, are investing in worker protective products.
Well, what if we just eliminated nail salons altogether?
Well, I'd go with that too, but I don't think that happened. I want another place that we're really depending on solvents is anesthetic agents are very important. Obviously, people having surgery, it's really critical. And that has been gone under quite a revolution in products. And the latest ones are a fluorinated compound. Sevoflurane is a commonly used anesthetic gas that we inhale and causes anesthesia. But I think the curious thing about these anesthetic agents, we really don't know how they work, which as a toxicologist, I'm always a little, you know, a little hesitant about products. We don't know how they work. We really don't know how alcohol works either. But a lot of these solvents are broad acting on our nervous system, and we really don't understand exactly how they work, how they affect and change the ion transport in the nervous system cells, and how they produce anesthesia and produce these effects that we that are in some ways obviously anesthetic agents, very desirable. And we drink alcohol as a solvent because we want to have the high from alcohol, and we're depending on it as a solvent for that. So we use solvents and depend on solvents a lot, and it comes back to, you know, trying to reduce exposure to unwanted exposure to solvents like benzene, hexanes, and remembering that industry agents use a lot of solvents. There's areas around the country that contaminate with solvents in drinking water. Carbon tetrachloride is one of them. It's using products to make printed circuit boards. So places like Binghamton, New York are heavily contaminated in that area, in the Tri-Cities area. So you never know. Solvents were used all over the place, and we were very careless with them.
So don't solvents evaporate? So,
yeah, they do. They evaporate, you know, usually fairly readily, and we inhale them. Like when you pump gasoline, you know, hexane and benzene are evaporating from the gasoline. That's what you're smelling. You're smelling a whole array of different petroleum distillates, petroleum products, greases, glues, other products. Like one of the examples is charcoal lighter fluid. If you do barbecue things.
Oh, yeah.
Try to move away from that. You know, use a plug-in electric device or use those little power things that you can put paper in. It takes a little bit longer to get your fire started, but I never use a charcoal lighter fluid because that's just a solvent. It's basically a watered-down gasoline, not watered-down, but a gasoline that's less volatile, but you're burning and releasing a lot of solvents into the air, and you're smelling the solvents from that as well as all the byproducts when it's burned. So you try to stay away from things like that and try to reduce our use. I think consumers can have a big impact on things like that.
Yes, I absolutely agree. So you've actually got this little list here in your book of different products that contain solvents, and we've got about 6 minutes left. So let's just look at this and see what kind of suggestions that we can give for people to do something else besides use these solvents. Like I'm looking at adhesives. Adhesives have a lot of solvents in it, and so something like rubber cement has a lot of solvents, but white glue doesn't. And so you could use white glue instead of rubber cement.
Right, absolutely. You try to use the ones that are more water-based products. Look for something that's water-based, that's not dependent on these solvents. And some glues will be high, like plastic glues, and you can have a lot of solvents in it. And that was one thing that people did. They put glues in paper bags and sniffed them to get the high off of glue sniffers. So, yeah, you want to be careful with glues and adhesives and really go toward the ones that are water-based. I think that's the key, is looking for water-based products that are evaporating water and hardening that way and not evaporating solvents.
And there's another one on your list here, correction fluid. See, listeners, these are all the things when you smell, you can smell these solvents, and these are all the smelling products. So correction fluid, there's actually water-based correction fluid, but I use correction tape. And I'm not typing, but I just have it on hand because sometimes I'm writing with a pen and I need to, you know, cross something out. But those little correction tapes don't smell like anything.
Yeah, that's right. I think then the other one is markers. I don't know if they've got markers on that
markers
list.
That's not on your list, but that's the first one I said at the beginning of the show. I think that those are the worst things, and they get advertised. You know, here's all these pretty colors, and you can use them for so many things, and they're just poisoning people.
Yeah, with my grandchildren, I found the parents bought a product that had fragrances in it. So you have different fragrances. I said, what are we doing having fragrances? Because how are those fragrances getting out? As soon as you have a fragrance, there's a solvent involved. Because it has to be volatilized. You have to inhale that. Your olfactory system has to smell it. If you're smelling something, that means something else is evaporating, carrying that fragrant chemical, that chemical that's stimulating the olfactory system to your nose. So you've got solvents involved somehow.
Sometimes,
you know, you don't have to go from that. You just have to say, you know, we're not going to have this product in house.
Yeah. So let's see. What else? We have on the list, spot removers. So spot, what would we do instead of spot removers?
Yeah, spot removers, they're, you know, because they depend on solvent, they're trying to dissolve the product that you spilled. But again, I think you want to start with simple things like cleaning up the spill, you know, by damp and paper towel, things like that. So you mop up as much as you can. If you do have to revert to a solvent to do a final cleanup, you can do that, but don't start with the solvent. Try to minimize your use of that material. And then look again for other products that might, and know what you're cleaning up. Do you really need to use a solvent?
I think one of the things we could just say in general is that that people often will just go for the chemical first thing. They just reach for the chemical and don't even think about what else might be available. And so there's so many ways to do spot removers. I spill things on my clothes, and so I'm always looking for spot removers. And there are a number of less toxic spot removers on the market that you can just go to places like Bed Bath & Beyond has some, and you know, just look around, and they aren't chemical spot removers. But you can also just go online, and you know, if you spilled red wine on something, look up red wine spot remover and things like that. And there's a lot of, you know, tried and true home remedies for removing spots. I do occasionally need to use a chemical spot remover to get something out if I want to save the garment. And if I do need that done, I'll just take it down to a dry cleaners and hold my nose when I walk in and don't breathe, and give it to them and say, here, take this spot out. And then the good thing, well, we haven't talked about dry cleaning at all, but we should say that solvents are used for dry cleaning. But if you bring your dry clean clothes home, take the plastic off, hang them up outside, then all those dry cleaning solvents will actually evaporate away. The problem is that people get their clothes dry cleaned, leave the plastic on, and stick it in the closet, and then they put them on, and all those solvents just are right there.
Yeah, that's the same thing with a lot of products. You know, your shower curtains. If you get a plastic shower curtain, you definitely want to air that out. And I really caution people to get cotton shower curtains because they're washable that way. The plastic shower curtains have a lot of phthalates and other chemicals that are volatilizing off of the product. So it's really important to be thinking about you know, products like that that do have a lot of chemical exposure. Same thing with the new cars. New cars have a lot of volatility. And new houses that are made with a lot of formaldehyde, there are glues that were used, and formaldehyde outgases fairly readily. And you might have, you know, with Katrina, there was a big kerfuffle about all that, where these homes, these trailer homes, were made out of formaldehyde-based products, and they're very toxic, basically toxic for the people that were in there because they're inhaling the formaldehyde, which has long-term health effects. So that we were still, as much as we know, being really careless with our solvents.
Yes, I think that we just, more and more people need to be, not only be aware of the toxic dangers, but decide to do something about it. And just, even if you just take one simple step and find out about one thing, if you just like don't wear nail polish after listening to today's show, then that's a step in the right direction. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Gilbert. We only have a few seconds left before we get to the end of the show. And I always learn so much from you when you do these shows. It's great to have you.
Okay.
So you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and you can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and learn about other upcoming guests and also listen to all of the past shows are in the archives, many with transcripts. So toxicfreetalkradio.com. Be well.